This recording was made during the prayer fellowship meeting on Wednesday evening, the 15th of May, 1991. The speaker is Miss Rosemary Gibson, who works in Peru with the Evangelical Union of South America, and she is introduced by Miss Edna Morrow.
It's a great pleasure for me to introduce to you Rosemary Gibson tonight. I knew Rosemary, we were at school together, although I have to admit I was a few years ahead of her. And then I got to know her again when she was a student at the Belfast Bible College, and I was doing evening classes there. And then I've just been keen to follow her up. Rosemary is working in Peru in a place called Arequipa. Is that the right pronunciation? And she's acting principal in what is known as the International College, which is a school that was founded by missionaries. And it's now a well-known college in Peru. It has a very high standing educationally, I think, all over Peru. And in fact, she was telling me there that she's hoping to kind of twin it with Belfast Royal Academy, which was the school that we went to. So, Rosemary, it's lovely to have you tonight, and we look forward to what you're going to say. If you remember, Rosemary came about 3 or 4 years ago, and the one thing that I remember was, maybe it shouldn't be the one thing I remember, but one of the things I remember her saying was that the church in Peru were no longer children, they were adolescent. And of course, with adolescence, there are all the problems of that. And she very much at that time when she was with us last had gone through a lot of problems with the church there being adolescent. I don't know whether she's going to say any more about that, but it's lovely to have you, Rosemary.
Well, it's lovely to be back again with you and to see such a good number out, as always, at the midweek, which is not always the case, even in my own church. And it's good to be able to share with you something of what the Lord is doing in Peru. Well, what I'd like to do is tell you about what I've been doing, but by way of structure, I'd like just to read 1 Corinthians chapter 9, because there's a verse here that seems to me to sum up really the things that God has been teaching me this last term of service. 1 Corinthians chapter 9, I'm sure you know the passage quite well, and we'll just read verses 22 and 23. 1 Corinthians 9, 22 and 23. To the weak I became weak to win the weak. I have become all things to all men, so that by all possible means I might save some. I do all this for the sake of the gospel, that I may share in its blessings. And in the latter part of verse 22, there are just three things that I think really sum up so far my experiences in Peru. Paul starts off by saying, I have become all things to all men. And I think there we see a tremendous variety in ministry, which is reflected in most people's missionary experience, I think, in these days. It used to be, in years past, that missionaries would go out to serve in a particular church, and they would sort of be there almost all their life, and they would then retire. And you could be praying your whole life for so-and-so in such-and-such a church or in such-and-such an area in Brazil or wherever. But nowadays it seems to be a bit different. And I went out to Peru in 1975 with the idea of doing youth work. Well, I've never really quite done youth work. It's always been something slightly different. First of all, I worked for 2.5 years with students in one of Lima's 17 universities. Lima's a huge, sprawling, bustling city, quite a nasty city in many ways. And as you know, at the moment, we're suffering with the cholera epidemic. There's a lot of lack of sanitation and so on in Lima. It's just too big. It's expanding so much that services don't expand to meet the population. So I worked there in one of the universities, starting a little CU group, Christian Union group, in one of the universities there. And praise God, from that tiny little beginning, the university group now has, well, there are now 5 little groups from that one that we started. So really, it's amazing what God can do. Then he called me up to the mountains. I actually went there for a short period to help in a Bible institute. And that was it. I sort of lost my heart to the high Andes and to the Quechua people. And so I went way off up to the high Andes, first of all, to a place called Andahuaylas. and I taught in the Bible Institute there. And then a need arose in our own mission area, which is further south, in a place called Sequani. And I taught in the Sequani Bible Institute, which trains Quechua church leaders, for 9 years. So I was all happily settled there when the crisis arose, which I told you about the last time, and we suddenly exited rather involuntarily from Sequani. And when I was going back last time, all I knew was that I was going back to Arequipa, but I didn't know what I was going back to. And it was all in the Lord's hands, really. So when I arrived back, I found another huge variety waiting for me. There's such a lot of variety in Peru itself as a country. Geographically, we've got a desert, we've got the high Andes, tremendous altitudes, and around the other side of the Andes, we've got a jungle. Racially, we've got the Quechua people, who are the descendants of the original Incas, and we've got the Spanish descendants, the sort of whiter ones, and then we've got the ones in the middle, who are called mestizos, and all sorts of funny racial mixes. And then, of course, we've got the actual monetary divisions that you can make, the sort of poor people and the middling well-off and the extremely wealthy. And really, in my time in Peru, I've mostly been with the relatively poor. But someone said, a rut is a grave with the ends knocked out. I don't think that's a very thought-provoking sentence. A rut is a grave with the ends knocked out. And I think, really, if you're going to be in the Lord's work these days, you might be in all sorts of things, but you're not going to be in a rut. I certainly have not been in a rut. And so there's been this variety of ministry. Every time I think I've got settled into something, I seem to be moved on to do something different. And it was the same with Paul. And he says that the next thing he says is that I've become all things to all men so that by all possible means. Because if you're going to have a variety in the places you are and the sort of people you're with, you also need a variety in your style, in the way you serve the Lord, in the way you explain the gospel to people. Because what I would say to explain the gospel to a Quechua-speaking person, a little poor farmer perhaps up in the high Andes in a remote community, wouldn't be the same presentation that I would use for quite an intellectual student in Lima. Obviously, you need to adapt your ways of doing things. And I've had quite a considerable difficulty in adapting, coming from the high Andes with the Quechua people and ending up in Arequipa, which is quite a sophisticated city. It's the second largest city in Peru with about... It's even bigger than Belfast. So there you are. Hope you're suitably impressed. It's quite a large city, about 600,000 people. And I was used to being in a very rural situation, you know, all very traditionally missionary stuff, horse rides and everything like that. And all of a sudden I was in this really quite nice city, and it's rather posh with it. You know, Arequipa, they say that Arequipa is not part of Peru, it's an independent republic, you know. Then they've actually got a little joke passport which you flash about, you know, and they've got a whole sense of being something different, a whole ethos which is different. And I didn't know whether I quite liked it at first. And then when I was praying about a ministry, I was looking for something similar to what I'd been doing. Bible teaching, leadership training, that sort of thing. And there wasn't anything of that sort in the church setup which the Evangelical Union of South America, the mission I work with, serves. I thought, how peculiar. You know, I wonder why the Lord's brought me down here. And there's nothing very obvious opening up. There am I, raring to go at something or other. And there wasn't anything. And all of a sudden, this opening appeared in our mission school, which was founded in 1923. And it really caused a total panic in me when the Peruvian headmaster came to me and said, look, I feel that my time in school has ended. I'd like to move on. I want to go into politics. I'd like to be an MP if I were to be elected. And there's no one to take over. The mission's been looking for several years, and there you are, and you haven't got a mission. Would you like to be joint headmistress and then take over when I leave? Well, gosh, I don't get a fit. Really, the school is huge. It's not just a little, you know, mission school conjures up a wee hut, you know, with probably a thatched roof, doesn't it? Well, this is a big modern school with 1,463 pupils in it. Custom-built building, 1975, donated by the Dutch government, although it was founded in 1923, but the little sort of rabbit warren where it used to be, it now belongs to the church, and we've got this great big impressive new building, a staff of 115. As Edna said, it's one of these schools in Arequipa, which I think is a really good testimony. I think it's not very good testimony to have a mediocre Christian school. If you're going to have one, it needs to be a good one, the best it can be, and it is. And there it was, this sudden opportunity, but I thought, goodness me, I couldn't possibly do that. I was used to this really quite humble ministry up, you know, getting alongside Kitchwa ladies in bowler hats and that sort of thing. And the sort of people who go to our school tend to be fairly middle class because it's a fee-paying school. And although the fees are only £20 a month, which of course is a pittance here, imagine being able to send your children to a private school for that price. But of course it's quite a bit there. And although some of our parents would be sort of fairly struggling to send their children there, others are reasonably wealthy. There's a fair mix, really. And then we've got quite a few poor children as well who come on scholarships. But I discovered in myself, apart from the panic of thinking it's too big, I couldn't possibly do it, all that admin and everything and all looking after the staff and all those children and the parents, not to mention the parents, my goodness, how could I possibly? I discovered in myself an attitude which was quite wrong. I sort of thought, I don't want to work with elegant ladies and high heels and hairdos and these sort of people who are rich, probably because they've exploited the poor. And I discovered that there was quite a little resentment, really, an anti-middle-class thing in me, which is quite inconsistent and ridiculous. But there it was, because it's quite easy to feel for the poor and to identify with the poor, and it touches your heart. I mean, we've all been really touched with Bangladesh and all these needs that you see. And you don't feel touched as a sort of plump, well-off lawyer who comes into your office. You don't. It doesn't touch your heart. But then I felt the Lord said to me, Rosemary, hold on a minute. Do you think, really, that Jesus died on the cross just for poor people? Don't you think he cares about rich people as well, or better off people? Don't you think he died for everybody? And of course I knew that. I've got my doctorate. I'm perfectly sound, you know, Belfast Bible College. I knew it, you see. But actually in my heart there was quite a different attitude. And I think we often have that sort of hidden prejudices which we don't realise are there, but which come out on occasion. And I think if you analyse the sort of things you give to, you find that, you know, it really comes out. So I really had to repent, and I thought, oh dear, this is dreadful. And I said, I'm sorry, Lord, that's awful. I know you don't love people on the basis of their bank balance. How ridiculous that would be. What a dreadful Christian gospel that would be. But I had that, so I had to repent, and so I said yes, and I went into school. And as quite often happens when you've had a struggle to say yes to the Lord, when you actually go in and start the job, it turned out to be absolutely wonderful. I really love it. Fantastic opportunities. Really great. And what got me over the hump, over this middle class thing, was that almost about the first or second day, I was sitting back behind this great big impressive desk in this big impressive office, feeling quite ridiculous and thinking, how do I kind of look like a headmistress? You know, how do you do this? And you don't seem to have little. I was sort of looking for a course, went on furlough, you know, sabbatical studies, how to be a headmistress, you know, but they don't seem to have any. And there was I, not knowing quite what to do and being really terribly ignorant about everything and relying on the staff, which fortunately they know what they're doing and they just sort of tell me what I'm supposed to be doing. But this lady came in, just sort of lady that I found threatening and a bit difficult. Very tall, great big sunglasses, gorgeous hairdo, and all sort of elegant and lovely, and she was bigger than me. It was even worse. Normally I tar over Peruvians because they're only short, but of course these folk are of Spanish descent, quite a lot of them, and they're taller, you see, and there she was standing tarring over me, and I thought, oh dear, have a seat, I said, how can I help you? And she took off her sunglasses, and she had a big black eye, and she started to cry. And her marriage was falling apart, and she'd come because she was really concerned about her son, because the problems at home were affecting him. He was only in primary, but he was getting bad marks. He was behaving badly, and the whole thing was really traumatizing this little boy. And really, the Lord, it was like scales being taken from my eye, and I suddenly realized, this is just a person. You know, the clothes really, what do they matter? The high heels and the hairdo. That's not it. This is a person. And not only a person, somebody who's really hurting and needing help. And needing someone to say, look, I can't solve your problems, but I can introduce you to somebody who can be with you and who can really help you. Not to an easy solution, but he'd be with you and help you through this time. And I was able to pray with her. And I think we had a wee cry together, because really, the poor thing, it was the most dreadful situation. And she went out and she said she felt a lot better. I was able to give her a New Testament. So that kind of opened my eyes to the fact that in school, we have of most strategic ministry to middle-class parents, because in fact the evangelical churches in Peru have hardly scraped the surface of middle-class folk, of better-off professional types. We always seem to be very successful among the poor. I'm not quite sure why, but really in Peru there's only one or two churches that have made any impact with the middle classes. And so I suddenly woke up to the fact that the Lord was giving me a great opportunity here to actually share the gospel in just in a personal way, and also in opening devotions at parents' meetings. We have that sort of thing, even if it's going to be a sort of almost coming to blows parents' meeting. We always have a devotional, and when we have shows and performances, like I'm sure you have here from time to time, displays, we also have a devotional opening. And there are actually 972 families that send their children to our school. What a fantastic opening, because these folk and their children would never dream of normally going to a church. Most of them would be nominally Roman Catholic, if anything. And only about 15% or so of our pupils and the staff would actually be evangelicals or from an evangelical Protestant sort of a background. So the vast majority in our school really aren't evangelicals. They are Catholics who come, mostly nominally, I would say, but who come because our school has got a good reputation. And they actually want the Bible teaching that we give, because we do obviously teach a lot more Bible and Scripture than even in the Catholic schools. So they actually choose us for that reason. So what a terrific opportunity. And if the Lord is saying to you, I want you to do something, and you're saying, oh, couldn't possibly, don't want to do that, do say yes, because if you say yes, you probably find you love it and you've got tremendous opportunities for serving the Lord. So there I found myself in the school with secondary. We have about 800 pupils in secondary. We have morning prayers, of course, at all levels every morning. So I do the secondary every morning in two shifts, because we don't all fit in. It's all a bit squashed in Peru, about 45 plus in a class to try and keep the fees down. And there they all are every morning. And you can just share with them about the Christian life. I try to do systematic Bible teaching, not big heavy stuff, but just sort of fairly well applied, hopefully, to the situation, and just going through Bible books and that sort of thing. And occasionally evangelistic. It's not always evangelistic, because I think that puts people right off, but just from time to time when it comes naturally in the text. So there's that. And then with the staff, we have three weekly Bible studies, which are voluntary, of course, for the staff. And also at all staff meetings, we have a wee devotional of about 5 to 10 minutes to begin. So, gosh, I don't know when I've been so delighted and thrilled with the ministry that God has given, because of the opportunities. It really is so liberating, so fantastic to have all this scope for ministry. And I would appreciate your prayers that God will give me wisdom and also freshness, because I do quite a lot of little talks. It's different from Bible teaching in a Bible institute. Those were big, long, sort of 45-minute classes. These tend to be little 10-minute spots to bored teenagers and that sort of thing. It's a wee bit different. But I need to be fresh, you know, have a word from the Lord and not just trundle out something. So those are the two things. And then finally, a commitment to caring. You see, there's a variety of ministry, this need for adaptability. And then here's the point of it all, so that by all possible means, I might save some. And I feel the caring heart of Paul comes through in that. It isn't just a sort of paperwork ministry. I feel that I do a lot of administration. Obviously, as headmistress, there's a lot, and I sign lots of little documents and initial lists and that. And every single purchase that is made from the school, I have to see it and check it and make sure it's all right, even if it's a washer for a tap. So there's endless queues of people always wanting in. And I think it would be very easy to end up just pushing paper around all the time. But I think that there's this commitment to caring. And my job is not about paper. It's about people. I try and get that priority right. So I would appreciate, again, prayer for that, that that priority will be kept right, that even if the paperwork piles up, well, I'll just do it sometime. But the people are the ones I feel are much more important. Well, I just wanted to finish by asking you if you're really committed to caring for somebody. First of all, somebody here, probably preaching to the converted here, but just ask yourself, you know, is there some person or persons that I really care about here that I sort of help and go and visit and see to and pray for? That's here. And then what about the mission field? I should think maybe probably most of you have, but is there some particular person somewhere that you really are taking a special interest. I'm very privileged to have Edna praying for me, but I'm not the only one that Edna prays for. There's a whole little list of little photographs up there in her room that she prays for. So it's not limited to one person, but I think to start off, if you're perhaps new to this, start off with one person that perhaps you've met. I think it's easier if you've met the person. And really get into that, get their information, get their prayer letter, find out about it, keep praying. And then, as the Lord, you know, helps you to meet other people, you can expand your prayer ministry and your mission ministry to other people. And I think it's that commitment to caring that's really going to help the Lord to extend his kingdom in all nations. So, variety in ministry, a need for adaptability, and a commitment to caring. And I think if we do all those things, because I'm not just talking about me, I'm sure it applies to everyone, then the result will be, as Paul says here, I do all this for the sake of the gospel, that I may share in its blessings. And that will be the result. You will be greatly blessed, as I have been, if you really say yes to God and care for people in his name and serve him wherever he has put you. Thank you.